All right, so once again, welcome everyone. Thank you so much for making time. It's a beautiful day outside, so we really appreciate you all being here to support the work of the Neighborhood Council. Once again, I thank Tiffany Joy, and I thank the Museum of the Moving Image, but I also thank all of you for making the time to be here with us, so thank you so much. So I'm Shireen Solomon. I'm with the Neighborhood Council, as is my colleague and friend Hiba, and also my daughter Dalila Saleh and Nuran are also going to introduce themselves coming up soon. But we wanted to just use this film as an opportunity to have a conversation about Muslims and Arabs in film and media. We have sort of about a half hour, so it'll be a bit of an express conversation, but it's something that can be very, very deep, and it takes certainly weeks, months, lifetimes to talk about, but we think it's an important conversation, especially now. And so I'm going to kind of I'll pass and can let you all sort of introduce yourselves, and then let's have a little conversation, shall we?
Thank you guys so much for joining us. My name is Hiba Khalil. I teach a course about theater and film in New York at St. John's. I'm part of the Neighborhood Council here with Shanine, and which Tiffany leads with us. And I also work for a voter mobilization and empowerment organization for Muslim communities called MGAGE. I'm going to pass it over to Dalila.
Yay. Hi, I'm Dalila. I'm a videographer and journalist.
Hi, I am Nuran Omar. I am a journalist at Queens Public Television, and I also teach digital media and film at the Young Women Leadership School, as long with Tiffany Joy.
Thank you. And so just a little bit about myself as well. I've hosted panels previously here because it's something that I'm very passionate about. I'm an artist and an educator, specifically around all things visual communication in terms of narrative, in terms of who has control of the narrative, who tells our stories, and the importance of storytelling. I do have quite a few notes to keep us on track so that we can honor our time together. How many of you have seen this film before? How many of you saw the film before? So it was the first time for everyone. Okay. So maybe we'll also at the end try to see if in our short time together we can also hear from you all as well. But I think that, you know, we started off, we had a little bit of a conversation before, really talking about one of the characters, the Baba Jean, starts off the film saying that, you know, we are storytellers, and storytellers are inherently who we are. So talking about the importance of storytelling, you know, this is a film that it was nominated for an Academy Award here in the West, but, you know, I feel like we have a few different topics in terms of, again, too, who's telling the story, which stories get a platform to be told. You know, what is it that we noticed here in this film that can be important for us as we think about the future of film and media and Arab and Muslim representation? So I think one of the things that I'll kind of start about is just talking. I'd love to hear from, you know, the panelists for us to talk about, you know, reminding us this was in 2016. So it's about 8 years old already. I noticed certainly that, you know, the character at the end, Suleiman, which is an honorable name, Suleiman mentions, you know, that we are a land whose beauty is its people. We are a land caught in the crossroads of empires. And we see the relevance today as we think about brothers and sisters in Gaza. So I'm wondering, you know, for you who all have specific experience in film and media, if you can talk a little bit about, you know, where we were, where we are, you know, how did we, you know, what was the landscape for this film?
I could definitely start by saying watching this film now, it triggers so many points. It gets me really emotional, especially with our brothers and sisters in Gaza and what's happening. Being a journalist and seeing how the journalists in Gaza are, you know, telling the stories, it's all storytelling, using our platforms, showcasing, even if it is through an animation, to teach others and to teach the youth and to teach the next generation. These stories that we, you know, subconsciously, we always tell stories and we share stories of our ancestors just to keep the lessons going on and showcasing our stories. I feel like it is very important, even though it's 8 years ago, and, you know, hopefully maybe we can create an animation about what was happening with our brothers and sisters in Palestine that could also be touching, you know, the future generations. It is really important, and yeah, it is very touching. So
thank you.
Yeah, I think I'll add on, this is one of the few animated films that exist with Muslim characters. And
In the West.
That's such an important framework because we've been telling our stories for ages. But the fact that this is one of the few animated films, this is one of the few films that centers a young Muslim character and a Muslim woman specifically. So many of the films and TV shows that we have are very one-dimensional in terms of like the representation that we're given of Muslims are just covered, they're just the background character, they're just like in the terrorist subplot, you know, and they're not, we're not seeing them three-dimensionally, we're not seeing them as full-fleshed human beings. So I'm grateful that we got to see a little bit of that through this.
Yeah, I think that prior to 2016, we didn't really see a lot of these stories on TV, and the kinds of stories that we see are very limited. So when I think back to like when I was a kid, like definitely no animation other than Aladdin, which is problematic in so many ways, but we don't really see these stories and we don't really see ourselves in these stories. So I think it's interesting that even post this movie, we still don't see a lot of those stories. I read an article last year that was published last year that basically said that still 1% of representation on television is Muslim. So it's still actually very low. So even though we have glimmers and snippets here and there, it's certainly not enough to cover the diversity of our community, of the Muslim community.
You know, I'm gonna just again, you know, if I said it before, but this was nominated, I think, for an Academy Award here. It received very quite a lot of recognition too, again in the West. I think it's from Canada. You see that there was, you know, Irish support as well for the film. But, you know, thinking about who gets to have that platform, which stories make their way to the West. So something that we can't forget as well, too, is, you know, there is something that is serving ultimately a Western viewpoint that allows it to gain that access. You know, to be publicized, to be promoted. So there must be something that is, that is sort of, you know, that makes us still feel comfortable. I think that the West is, you know, sort of going in and saving, our Arab and Muslim communities around the world. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about Muslim platforms, Muslim creators, the importance of having our names behind the camera. Dalila, if it's okay, I'll start with you. I think the first thing when I mentioned the film, I think you mentioned the director, the producer of the film. Would you like to take that in terms of the importance of Muslim filmmakers?
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys noticed, the credits were long, but it was based on a book by Deborah Ellis, who's a white woman, and she wrote the screenplay as well. So thinking about, again, like which creators are platformed when telling our stories. So many of the stories that feature Muslim characters in film and TV are written by white people, and so they're missing so much of the nuance of, you know, all the tapestry of beautiful things that make up our brilliant, like, Muslim community. And I think especially it's notable that it received, like, Academy recognition. Like, what are the shows, what are the kinds of stories that are being told that are receiving this recognition in the West? It's stories of, like, hardship and suffering and misery, and, like, that feeds a greater narrative of how the West perceives the Arab and Muslim world. And we know that that's not true. That's part of our experience, but that's definitely such a small part compared to the beautiful things that we experience. So thinking about, we've talked about like Rami Yusuf and Muhammad, and those are the sort of like contemporary Muslim creators that we're thinking about, and they've received recognition, but again, it's through the lens of patriarchy. Like, they're Muslim men, and the stories that they're telling are more authentic because, you know, they've been through those experiences, but it's still missing that like Muslim female lens. And it's not to say we're not creating those films or TV shows. Mm-hmm. We're creating them, but we're still not receiving that same sort of recognition from the Academy, from the Emmys, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, if you guys want to build on that.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the movies that make their way to the West, like this movie is about the Taliban. Like, it's very clear that it's talking about, you know, a group of people that, you know, a very oppressive regime, which we can all recognize, but we can also recognize, like, the fact that if that's the image the West is getting, and mm-hmm. it's already been fed through the news and through the fact that there was a war there that the U.S. started, right? So we're getting this message that that these people are very violent. So what I appreciate about the film, although it is about the Taliban, is that it has multiple layers. So you see so many different characters, and even the people that are part of the Taliban still trying to help the young girl get her father back. So it's layered and it's beautiful, but it's also still about the Taliban, which is the running narrative about political things that happen in the Middle East and the people that run them. So I think that's interesting too about those stories.
Yeah, also I also love the idea that they build that relationship between father and daughter, and to showcasing that there are amazing fathers out there that do believe in their daughters and, you know, in what they want to do. Even similar to when we were younger, I never had like that someone to look over or to look up to as a journalist. So I've always wanted to be a journalist, but to have that support from, you know, a father that's like, hey, you could go share your voice. It's not just whatever shared out there. You can be a journalist in Al Jazeera. And now you can see young adults that are going into this kind of field. So that's something great. But also speaking about, you know, the credits, Angelina Jolie also put a role in it. So I feel like she also put, you know, having that experience of traveling over there and seeing it herself, she also put in a point where that's why it could possibly be nominated in so many awards. It's also community connections. That's how it is. That's what I think.
Thank you. So, you know, again, talking about, you know, the difference between 2016 and now. So we know, obviously, you know, in addition to the layers of film and TV, we know that most of our, you know, how we absorb media has been social media as well. So there's like all these different spaces where we're hearing the layers and layers of stories. So that awareness, I think, you know, think about prior to 2016, where were most people hearing their news from? Where were most people hearing, you know, stories about, you know, the Middle East, which it's an inherently, you know, a problematic name. But, you know, think about when it switches now, where Muslims and Arabs are telling our own stories. What becomes most important now, right? What do we put out as front? We talk about our culture, the richness of our heritage, the richness of our contributions to all fields, rather than us as victims that are needing to be saved, rather than, you know, what we are aware of are within our community. Yes, there are oppressive regimes, but then, you know, for it to sort of be, that's the part that's highlighted. I'm even thinking about media when we were talking about, my daughter also has to correct me, Women, Life, Freedom. Is that the movement for the, yes, so the Women, Life, Freedom movement, we were talking about the women in Iran, you know, who rightfully have a right to that dignity and that agency and that autonomy over their own body. But something about that Orientalist lens in terms of, again, the women needing to be saved because they're the victims. And so everything that we're doing, you know, as going in the West to be able to save them. I'm wondering about, you know, talking about Muslim representation now, could you guys share a little bit about what Muslim representation or Arab representation looks like beyond the West and Hollywood, and, you know, what we are seeing that is, again, too, helps us to stay comfortable here in the West? What do we see in the Middle East?
The first thing that comes to mind, something we even spoke about, is Bakar. Mm-hmm. It's something lighthearted when I think of Ramadan, you know, Tiyur al-Jannah. These are like little animations that are showcasing the beauty of Islam and Ramadan in that aspect. And I feel like we don't have that in the Western culture, where mm-mm. there's like animations just showcasing what it's like to have Ramadan and a feast with your family and friends and inviting people from different cultures just to experience the day. So it is very different, and based even just on animations.
Mm-hmm. So. We also talked about Al Ruwaibi School for Arab girls, mm-hmm. I think it was mm-hmm. called. Yeah, okay. So there's shows that are being created in the Arab world that now, because of streaming, have been able to reach us. And so both, you know, Arab and non-Arab people, like, from the U.S. are able to be like, oh, this is what it's like to grow up and go to school, you know, in Egypt, for example. And I think streaming has done such a, has, like, played such a big role in giving people access to what other creators are doing abroad, and a glimpse into what life is like outside of, you know, a Eurocentric lens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really appreciate streaming for that reason, because growing up, like, the things that we would see are in Ramadan are like the things that you know, your family would show through the dish. Like, dish was like it, and you would see a show that would run, and like, that was a nice experience. So streaming really has widened our horizon with that. And also, I think that some of the shows that are popular, although it's through like a patriarchal lens, and that has its own problems, I think what's interesting about those shows that are popular is that it kind of shows the things that people here deal with like being Muslim, being American, how those things conflict sometimes, how people deal with those things. So I think that streaming and the combination of the few shows that are popular can help us get to a place where Muslim representation is more mainstream and more acceptable in the mainstream, and something that people don't see like, oh, that's a Muslim character, but that's just a character dealing with things that may be specific to their culture, but they're still a part of the fabric of America.
And to add on quickly about the streaming, I think, so like, I grew up watching Musalsalat, which are soap operas, with my family. Classic like diaspora thing, and a lot of times you'd have to like pause every few minutes, and my mom or grandma would have to translate for me, and so even though I was experiencing like the visual imagery, it was sort of like a watered down story that I was getting of, you know, the things that we were watching. And so it's felt so significant to be able to have translations through Netflix. I think it's been primarily Netflix, but to be able to watch them with my family, and we can, and I can experience it, they can experience it, as it's, you know, meant to be watched. And that's like a big point of access for, I think, diaspora kids who, you know, maybe speak some Arabic but aren't as fluent, but still want to be able to engage in these stories about their people.
Yeah, so I heard a lot about humanizing characters. You know, again, turning back to something that I kind of sort of sprinkled in there quickly, right? This idea of Orientalism, as framed by Edward Said, may he rest in peace, where, you know, ultimately we're thinking about the East and everything Middle East and beyond from the lens of the West, because we're thinking about, again, this othering, this exotification, right, of things that are different. And so, you know, then, you know, it becomes a slippery slope to what we see as the fuel for Islamophobia. And this flattening of our experience, extreme flattening. I think you mentioned, of course, one of my favorite arch nemeses, Aladdin, you know, where it's this magical world of Agrabah, which means nothing, which doesn't exist in the realm of reality. It honors not our language or our cultures or the distinctions between, you know, the different, you know, it doesn't honor geography, right? So, you know, these kind of like extreme flattening of the other. So again, becoming sort of these tropes, you know, in Islamophobia. Tell me more about what you think are some of the other, you know, stereotypes that we see as a result of, you know, the effect of Islamophobia in film and media.
I would actually love to jump on this. there's a lot of shows that are on Netflix that are, you know, created in Europe. It's not even just the westernized, where the girl, for instance, wears the hijab and she's being oppressed and then she removes it by the end of it. Mm-hmm. And that's her sense of freedom. Mm-hmm. The hijab is freedom itself. Mm-hmm. You know, the choice that you are doing to represent yourself Islamically and to represent yourself in your culture. And, you know, I applaud everyone that wears it. And I feel like that's where they're trying to be sneaky with Islamophobia in that mm-hmm. sense. So that's the first thing that comes to mind, that I feel like if it was them just showing the character wearing the hijab and making something out of herself, becoming an empire just by her wearing a hijab and empowering it, then it wouldn't be a sense of Islamophobia. Mm-hmm. It would just be a phenomenal character in that sense.
I think we've also seen the trope of like the good Muslim character who's like in law enforcement and helps protect our governments from the evil Muslims abroad. Like not even thinly veiled, like blatant propaganda. But like that's one of the few ways that we're able to get representation is like, well, like at least they're not showing that we're evil. Like the people abroad are evil, but at least we have good people here. And that feeds into like, you know, greater tropes. Mm-hmm. But And again, thinking about like who's writing those characters, who's playing those characters. A lot of the people that are playing Muslim characters on TV are not Muslim, are not of like our ethnic heritage. And, you know, that's problematic for so many reasons.
Yeah, and also to speak to that point, sometimes the language that they're pretending to speak is not, it's not even like real Arabic. It's still like some version of it. It's so offensive and ridiculous almost. Like, why can't you just hire an Arabic actor to actually speak Arabic for this particular scene? I think also in terms of the flattening, a lot of the times the characters we see are Arab and South Asian, but a lot, Islam is the most diverse religion in the world, and we don't see the diversity of the religion. Mm-hmm. 1/3 of the Muslims in America are Black Muslims, and we don't see that represented mm-hmm. either. So I think the flattening is a really real problem, and also the conflation of all Arabs as Muslims is another mm-hmm. problem we see. So there's so many mistakes that are still happening, and it's just with the wealth of knowledge that we have and the wealth of people that we have in media, I think it would be great to see some of that shifting.
And it is already starting to shift. I think that's important to note. Like, there are so many problematic representations, and there are so many people that are actively like creating counter narratives. And there are organizations like the Pillars Fund and MPAC Hollywood Borough that are like funding these projects and mentoring filmmakers and paving the way for a future in which we have so much more diverse and authentic representation.
I'm thinking about what we were talking about again in terms of social media versus film and media, the relevance, I think, anymore of TV and mainstream media. I'm just wondering again, too, like as we start to wrap up, thinking about the use of, that's what I was going to talk about. Not only just the use of propaganda in film and media, the use of these tropes, the Orientalism. What about the dangers of censoring, right? The censorship that's also going on. So, you know, I think this was an animated film that I remember seeing at the time. Seeing it now again, however many years later, actually felt even more painful. Even more painful, because since this film, to my knowledge, and I'm somebody who kind of tries to keep a track, but there haven't been any other animated films of this kind to show, you know, Muslims, and especially the next generation, Muslim children, you know, as the heroes of a story. There haven't, you know, there. It's again, it's either, you know, we are, you know, actors and storytellers are called in, you know, to ensure that they're upholding, you know, ideas that, you know, Muslim-American, then the American part, you know, you're the good ones and, you know, you can help us in this fight against terrorism, the ongoing nebulous fight against terrorism, owning the narrative of what that means. And so, you know, even though this film, maybe again too, thinking about, you know, what was, you know, for it to have made it to the West, it must have been palatable, it must have been comfortable, right? So it's the Afghanis that are this inferior, you know, group, and we have to go in and save them. And then there was, you know, the comment about Sulaiman, and it was a Russian bomb, right? So, you know, bringing all of these little things in, it helps it make it palatable. And yet it was one thing that we had. We haven't had any films since then. And so, you know, I think that's why I was so happy to see sort of a range of different generations and different spaces where we have, you know, Muslim women, especially Muslim women, you know, talking about, you know, what could be our role in the future of creating platforms, funding, supporting platforms like these. You know, again, a big thanks to the Museum of the Moving Image for giving us the space to have these conversations. You know, again, I think maybe people thought, oh, it's a fun little animation, but I'll just kind of round out about a couple notes that I took around, again, the visual communication. I thought it was important, if you all noticed, that I thought there was some brilliant things, I think, artistically in the film, we'll all agree. And I thought it was something that I don't think I noticed the first time. But when animated characters dream, they dream in stop motion. I thought that that was brilliant, right? And so if we're already in character mode and cartoon mode, right? So how do we know when it becomes a fairy tale, when it's a fantasy? So it turns to stop motion. And in those two worlds, in the cartoon world, we notice the use of color, extreme contrast between the very, very washed out, dull harshness of Kabul and then the vivid richness, sumptuous richness and pattern in the fantasy world. And that fantasy world represented how Afghan people see themselves. It's their history, it's their culture, and it's in full, brilliant color. And that touched me, I think. Was there one, with each one of you, did you notice anything sort of artistic or a moment of noticing in the film? I'm putting you on the spot.
I loved the transitions between like what was going on and then the story within the story. There were a lot of like, this is so nerdy, but like film, like transitions of like, you would see a shape and then there would be that same shape like, you know, either in the dream or in the, you know, story that was going on. So that was so cool to see, like, play out in an animation way, because that's something that we do in editing for, like, live action stuff. And I think just seeing, like, I think my mom's right, just, like, the beautiful colors and shapes. And the vibrant clothes as well. Mm-hmm. Thinking about like how black and white, especially New York, like the palette that we have versus how beautiful and vibrant the clothes are that they're wearing is really cool.
For me, it was that postcard that they were looking at, and then if you see in the background, it was just a desert, and mm-hmm. it was just simple and sound, and they were fantasizing about going under these palm trees and selling jewels. So to see that difference of where they're at and the postcard of their dream made such a big difference.
The
use of color.
This is so morose, but I really actually liked the time where the hardship that was presented in their traveling. Mm-hmm. That was something that really stood out to me. And then another thing that stood out to me was when she was cutting her hair. Mm. And that transition she made between being outward facing as a girl and turning into a boy. So there is something so beautiful in that moment where her and her sister are finally bonding about something. Mm. And there's something so beautiful about seeing people trying to get to a place and not necessarily having the means to get there. So those were I had the feeling of the opposite of color was really mm-hmm. moving and speaking to me.
I think that also to light, if you guys noticed the motif of light and how it was used, when elements of the screen would light up, they represented hope, but they also represented fear. They represented danger. There was a lot of really beautiful artistic things, but just to round out, I mean, this is maybe morose as well, but I mean, just to round out, you know, yes, does misogyny happen in our communities and in our cultures and in our countries? Yes. Is there sexism? Yes. Is there more freedom when, you know, bodies are moving as male bodies in society? Sometimes. But it always makes a difference, I think. You know, it's like when somebody says something bad about your cousin, and you're like, you can't say anything bad about my cousin. It's my cousin, right? So what happens when, you know, we're telling our own stories, and we know we're telling it from a safe space where there's not an agenda of harm. There's agenda of us wanting to flourish to our fullest selves. So like I said, I mean, the movie as problematic as maybe it was, but you know, for everyone, I hope it helped us to have a human connection to real lives, not just numbers on a screen of being people affected by war, but real beautiful love story between a family